Good morning and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book study. My name is Elaine B. and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater from Massachusetts. Today is Monday, June 4th, 2018. Today we're reading from the Big Book and How It Works. On page 67, we're reading the first paragraph, starting with We Avoid Retaliation, through the second paragraph, ending with Willing to Set Matters Straight. We'll be commenting on both paragraphs today. Today's readers are Maggie A. for the 12 Steps, Brandy M. for the 12 Traditions, Kathleen O., Marie J., and Ginger C. And Melanie C. is our newcomer greeter. The reference number for the 10 a.m. meeting yesterday, which was Sunday, June 3rd, our special edition meeting at 8:30 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, is 11495. That's 11,495. And the reference number for this morning, 7 a.m. Eastern Standard Time meeting for June 4th, Monday, is 11,496. That's 11496. The OA preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We're self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states that each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At A Vision for You Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. I will now ask Maggie A. to please read the 12 steps.
Good morning. This is Maggie A. from Western New York. The 12 steps. One, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought for prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. And 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all of our affairs. Thanks, and I pass.
Thank you very much, Maggie A. I will now ask Brandy M. to please read the 12 traditions.
Good morning. Can I be heard?
Yes, you can. Thank you.
It's Brandy M. from Canada. The 12 traditions. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, the only requirement for our OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. Four, each group should be autonomous, except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. Five, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. Six, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. Seven, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. Eight, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all of our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thanks for letting me do service, and I'll pass.
Thank you very much, Brandy M. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature and stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we're discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirements for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There's no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We're sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you're done sharing, let us know by saying pass, then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker should be muted. Today, we resume our study of the Big Book on page 67, reading the first and second paragraphs, and I will now ask Kathleen O. to please begin reading.
Good morning, Elaine. Thank you so much. This is Kathleen O., recovered compulsive overeater in Northern California. We avoid retaliation or argument. We wouldn't treat sick people that way. If we do, we destroy our chance of being helpful. We cannot be helpful to all people, but at least God will show us how to take a kindly and tolerant view of each and every one. Referring to our list again, putting out of our minds the wrongs others had done, we resolutely looked for our own mistakes. Where had we been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened? Though a situation had not been entirely our fault, we tried to disregard the other person involved entirely. Where were we to blame? The inventory was ours, not the other man's. When we saw our faults, we listed them. We placed them before us in black and white. We admitted our wrongs honestly and were willing to set these matters straight. So we avoid retaliation or argument. And this is a shift from self to God. And it's so pertinent in having a change in attitude so that I don't go back to the food again. Hold on 1 second.
Okay. Please stand by, everyone.
I'm sorry, Elaine.
No problem.
Murphy's Law, right? So I heard the paragraph referring to our list again, resolutely look for our own mistakes. Where have we been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened? And I had heard this paragraph as instructions for what was called a turnaround. Yet there is no mention of that wording in the Big Book. And I don't think any original members ever talked about turnarounds. And, you know, page 70 tells us if we've been thorough about our personal inventory, we've written down a lot and we've listed and analyzed our resentments. So there is discussion about listing harms, but really not until page 70. And 76 states that we have a list of persons we have harmed and to whom we're willing to make amends. So the fourth step helps us see where our self-will is blocking us. And, you know, I couldn't have a spiritual experience if I was blocked. So this paragraph asks, where have we been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened? And it's really meant to be more of a checklist. You know, I was instructed to be specific in how I was selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened. And, you know, selfish, what did I want from this person, principal, institution, self-seeking, what behaviors did I have? But really, the Big Book doesn't tell us to go into that kind of detail. And when I did this step, I took a year to do it. And, you know, this is meant for us to start helping other people. And if Bill and all the original people had taken that long to do a fourth step, they would not have been able to help the number of people that they had helped. So, excuse me, it really is about being concise and listing the people we have harmed and the exact nature. And another thing I find really interesting on page 67, where was I selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened? On page 84, self-seeking has changed to resentment. We watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. Anyway, so the big book's intended to be so simple that anyone can do it and that they can do it quickly. And a year inventory really isn't necessary. You know, my freedom is tied to my ability to be a loving human being. And I have the avoiding retaliation argument. I just have this kind of go-to, bless them, change me. Do I want to be right or do I want to be happy? You know, this is about having a new attitude and giving up playing God and telling other people what to do. And ultimately, that's going to bring me freedom. And I pass and thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Kathleen O. Who else would like to comment on these powerful paragraphs today?
Marie J.
I heard Marie J.
Roz G.
Ginger C. Roz G. I think there was somebody else
Chevy.
I missed. Marie, Ginger, Roz, Chevy.
Chevy K.
K, okay. Anybody else? Okay, let's start with Marie J, Ginger C, Roz G, and Chevy K. Please go ahead, Marie. You'll be followed by Ginger.
Thanks. Good morning, everybody. This is Marie J, recovered in Colorado. And, the purpose of the fourth step is to examine my part, and I didn't always know that. You know, when I did it the first time, boy, I really wanted to dig into all those resentments. You know, somebody has done something that I find unacceptable, and I get triggered and I have a resentment. And I used to react and go to self-righteousness and rage, you know, because people are triggering my instincts, those instincts of self-esteem, ambition, security, relationships. And something in the back of my head when somebody triggers me tells me that I'm not worthy and that what they did confirms this lie that I believe that I'm not worthy and I have to retaliate to get them to validate me. So it's all about all these insecurities around these instincts. And this is all my ego. It's my disease. And it's me looking for my worth outside of myself. And today's triggers that I get triggered by, you know, my husband and the people close to me in my life are just reminders of my past and those triggers that are the parental messages and the things that I grew up with. So when I'm looking at my part, I need to get past all that head stuff and get into my heart and really take a look at my part. And when I look at my selfishness, it almost always comes down to I want somebody to behave differently so that I feel better, so I don't have to face the feelings I have and my insecurities. I want validation. I don't want to have to face my own imperfection. And how am I being dishonest? You know, I'm always believing a lie about them or a lie about me. So what's the lie that I'm telling myself that is going to vindicate me and justify my reaction and my righteousness? And in the self-seeking, you know, it used to be easy for me to see how I was behaving because I would go to rage and shame. So it was loud, it was noisy, see that, especially with my husband, you know, and I don't do that anymore. But I can still be manipulative and sweet and still try to get my way through that sweet manipulation. Or I can withdraw. You know, I can shut down and ignore and be dismissive. And these are more subtle and they're less violent, but they are still my self-seeking behavior that helps me validate my feelings of resentment. And fear always comes down to, I'm not going to get what I think I need, or I'm going to lose something that I think I've got. And all of that is related to my thinking. What's between my ears? You know, my diseased mind is running the show. Fear's between my ears. It's my thinking. And where there is fear, there's no room for God. And most of my fear is based in my past, and I project it onto my present relationship so I can work the steps. I can work the steps today to change my mind. And I have this laminated bookmark that I carry with me everywhere, and it says, much suffering, much unhappiness arises when you take each thought that comes into your head for the truth. So I got to stop lying to myself. Thanks for letting me share. I pass.
Thank you very much, Ginger C. Marie J., Ginger C., you're up next, followed by Roz T.
Thank you. Oh, no, wait a minute.
Good
that
morning.
Was... Right?
This is Ginger C.
Oh, Ginger, thank you so much. I got a little off track with my note-taking here. Thank you so much, Ginger, and you'll be followed by Roz. Thanks so much.
Oh, thank you so much, Elaine, for your service. Ginger C., recovered compulsive overeater in Colorado. So putting out of the minds the wrongs others have done, we resolutely looked for our own mistakes. The inventory was ours, not the other man's. So I got to take their face and their name and put it aside. This is my deal, you know, and God, show me the truth, because guess what? The truth will set you free. And what is my most important problem? I lack power. We learn that in step one. And when I get pissed and when I get hurt and I start reacting and then I start resending this thought over and over, because that's what I love to do, is ruminate and prove to myself why they're wrong, why I am justified with these feelings, I block that power. And that power is the only thing to keep me safe and protected as an addict. So what a gift, again, these clear-cut directions. How blessed we are to have this book. It solves all my problems. And the only thing I have to do is a day at a time, I have to stay in it and keep practicing it. And we practice it not to become perfect, because perfectionism is just another sickness. It's just to create a habit. So I know when my thinking starts to go astray and I get with these resentments or these fears, again, I get back into the action so I can get turned around and released and back and connected with this power that I lack. But, you know, I love this. A couple paragraphs before it said, perhaps they're spiritually sick. You know, perhaps we don't even know, but you know what? I know I'm sick because I'm disturbed. My buttons have been pushed and I am not doing well. And what is my problem? Selfishness, self-centered. It's all about Ginger. Every 10th step always goes back to me. And a lot of the times I'm so blindsided, and I love my spiritual teacher. She is amazing to me, this 10-step work. She does soul surgery. She digs deep. And she has unblocked me in ways that I have been blown away. A therapist couldn't do as well as this woman does. And I know it's just God working through her. She's been given a gift. But boy, the clarity, and then to see my part and to see it so clearly, I can't go on behaving the way I am. It's so clear that I am just sick and selfish and self-centered and making, again, this show all about Ginger. So thank you, God, for Bill Wilson and this big book. We are all so blessed to have been brought to it, and I pray I'm never out of it. And with that, I pass.
Thank you so much, Ginger C. Roz G., you're up next, followed by Chevy K.
Good morning. This is Roz G. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater on summer break, and I am happy about that. So, okay, I like to joke and call myself a recovering know-it-all, because I look at these things here, and I never saw my selfishness. I never saw dishonesty. I never saw self-seeking. I never thought I was frightened. I never thought I was to blame. I never thought I had any faults, really. And I knew your problem. I knew my problem and how to solve them all. And I'm very grateful for my early days in OA. I don't want to look back with remorse or anger, but sometimes I think, why didn't I learn this in the early days? I just filled out a bunch of forms and did APOR and all this stuff and took a 6-month fourth step, something like 6 months. And I didn't learn anything except who I was mad at and who I was abused by or who I, you know, what everybody did to me. And this totally is the opposite. So I have to say that, you know, sometimes the way I see that I'm recovered is through the eyes of other people. And yesterday, my daughter and I went to a farmer's market near the ocean. We had such a nice day together. And she said, you know, she was gone last year. And this will be relevant to this, what this is, what this says here. But she was saying, Mom, you have been so nice to be around. You've been great. It's really been nice to be around you. And I just want to give credit to the book, to the steps, to really studying deeply with the vision for you. And now when I look at myself, it's all about me, my selfishness, me wanting to get ahead and taking actions because I'm fear. A lot of the actions that I took, and I probably still take, but at least I can recognize it, it's because I'm afraid of something. And so today I'm very grateful that I've learned, that I'm learning that the fourth step is a place for me to, yes, look at who I'm angry at and why, but there's always a part where I am involved, where my selfishness had a lot to do with it. And I never thought of praying for somebody that I was mad at. I never thought of looking at them with tolerance, kindness, consideration, and compassion. And throughout my circles of people, whether it's at work, whether it's in 12-step groups or social church, I get along and I have so many more friends today, so many more things to do with them. As I look at them, thank you, as I look at them with patience, kindliness, tolerance, and love, it's a beautiful way to live. Thank you, and I pass.
Thank you, Roz G. Chevy K, you're up next, and then we'll open for some more shares.
Hi, good morning. This is Chevy K. Can I be heard?
Yes, you can.
Good morning. Thank you, everyone, so much for your service. Thank you for your shares. Sorry, that was my phone. Okay, so putting out of our minds the wrongs others had done. And I think this was my biggest challenge, putting out of my mind where I had been wronged, where I had been faulted, and where I was the victim. And this was my biggest roadblock. And I had to do my step four a few times until I was open and willing and ready to see my part in things. So my selfishness was that I always wanted every situation to be different. I wanted people to be different. I wanted circumstances to be different. And originally I wrote my step, when I did my first step four, my selfishness was, I wrote as a narrative on how things should have been different, almost convincing myself that I was right. And now when I write my selfishness, it's simple. There's no convincing myself otherwise. I just want things to be different, period. And the pattern that I'm finding in my dishonesty is that in wanting things to be different, the person who I have a resentment at should have, this person should have, and I have certain expectations of this person. And this comes up over and over and over again, the should have, the expectations, what I want, my will. And also another dishonesty is that I want to run the show. I'm God. In my expectation of things being a certain way, or someone should have done this, or should have said that, or should have reacted a certain way, I'm playing God. And that is my biggest dishonesty. And in terms of my fear is that I will not have the outcome that I want. I will not have the outcome that I illustrate. And I need to give up that fear and tell myself, Chevy K, God is running the show. He's got this. He has everything outlined. He has everything planned long before this situation came in front of you. And when I can remember that God is running the show and God has got it all, God is in control, then I am in a much better place. I am living in serenity. I just wanted to share that. Thank you so much, and I pass.
Thank you very much, Chevy K. So we are on page 67 in the chapter How It Works. We're reading the first and second paragraphs and commenting on both. And who would like to comment on that part of the big book?
Kelly T.
Courtney B.
Kelly T. Courtney B.
Kathy G.
Kathy G. Anyone else? Okay, let's go with Kelly T., Courtney B., and Kathy G., and Sherry KB. Please go ahead, Kelly. You'll be followed by Courtney.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Kelly T. from New York City. Thank you so much for your service. And it amazes me every time when I do call in vision, it's the right time to call in to hear what I need to hear. It's amazing how it works. Like right now, I'm struggling with letting go of a fear, and we on step four, and it's funny how I keep turning it over, ten step, but it's still there. And here from the shares of, I'm holding on to the resentments, you know? I mean, the fear that everything's not going to go okay. My mom's going into surgery tomorrow. And I'm noticing that I'm taking my will, not trusting my higher power right now. And mind you, I've been recovered for a year now. And I'm realizing it doesn't matter how long I've been recovered. I have to continue every day being honest with myself. Where do I need to keep working at? Where am I lacking? And I'm noticing that I need to connect more with my higher power and really trust her that she's going to take care of my mother tomorrow and just be a service to my mother. She doesn't speak English, so I have to be the one there doing the paperwork. I have to be strong and have higher power speak through me so I could be patient and loving towards my mom and translate for her and be a service and not focus on, oh, fear this, fear that. Because if I continue focusing on the fear, I'm going to go back to the food, and I don't want that today. So and through experience, I know that that's what's going to happen if I don't be honest and turn it over to my fellows. And I'm just really grateful that I get to hear the message because I'm not in the food today. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Kelly T. Courtney B., you're up next, followed by Kathy G. Star one to unmute, please, Courtney.
Courtney B., can you hear me?
Yes, thank you so much.
Good morning. I'm Courtney B. from Northern California. What I think about with this whole, you know, the inventory for me, it did start with my resentments. I took their inventory. I had to get it out. I'm resentful at this. This happened. This happened. This is how I reacted. But it's to move it from my head into my heart. And this whole idea of ego for me brings up shame and punishment. I've been able to, instead of saying the word ego, it's my wounded child inside. It was hurt. And it didn't know how to, it needed safety, security, love. Everybody needs it. It's a human hunger. Didn't happen. I'm on my own. And I've been able to say, I never, never shame my ego, inner wounded kid. I just say, oh, you've got some needs that aren't being met. Instead of going to you, to you, to you to make, validate and prove I was right, I get to say, it's okay. You don't need it from them. To have the pause and a willingness, I know as I've been kind towards myself, wounded kid, ego, I was able to say, you know, honey, because she feels like she always needs to be in control. Well, somebody has to. Nobody's doing it, you know. You know what, sweetheart? You've done such a good job at trying to protect me. But it's not your job. You don't have to anymore. Let's go deeper with God and your spirituality. So, and just as I have forgiven myself, it's been much easier for me, willing to let go of other people's throat, my need to get even, to be understood, to be validated. And forgiveness, it feels so good in my body. I'm telling you, this stuff works, but for me, kindness and love towards, you want to call it ego, wound, I like wounded kid, because those are instincts that didn't get met. I didn't know how else to do it, i.e. defects. But to come at her and say, God, I'm so sorry, but there's a better way now. Let's see what God has to say. And then she's pretty happy. So when people do stuff, my little kid's like, oh, no, danger, Will Robinson. I can say, really? What's the lie here that you're on your own? No, no, no. And I'm not going to be looking to others to satisfy her. Not a good, not a safe place, but there is a much safer place, which is my higher power. With that, I pass.
Thank you, Courtney B. Haven't heard Danger Real Will Robinson in a while. That was great. Kathy G., followed by Sherry K.B. Please go ahead, Kathy.
Hi. Thanks so much, Elaine, and good morning, everyone. So grateful to be here on this beautiful day in Illinois and grateful to be recovered today. I just wanted to share a victory that I recognize that came out of working these steps. And it was evidence to the fact that I have experienced a psychic change. Just a little thing that happened last night where my husband is this precious man who has just, you know, journeyed along with me all of these years and all of the changing food plans and, you know, things that I had to do to take care of myself along the way to landing finally at a safe, healthy place. And he's a total foodie, and he's like a chef for a hobby, and he loves to cook. And so I found that in my recovery, because I just basically eat really simply now, I'm primarily plant-based at this point, and one of his nicknames is Meat Boy. So the poor guy, he has a daughter living here who's a vegan, he has me overcoming an eating disorder, and he wants meat. Oh, God bless him that he hasn't given up on us. But I found that I used to get a little bit resentful when he wanted to cook because there was so much involved and it was elaborate and there was all this cleanup and stuff. And last night I caught myself when he was saying, would you like me to cook tonight? And we get that look in his eyes. I know that it means he'd really like to cook. And it brings him enjoyment, right? So I used to be so focused on, oh, the cleanup, the time, the stuff, the elaborate nature of these meals and whatever. And so rather than focusing on myself and my extreme self-centeredness last night, the thought comes into my head, how can I be helpful to him? And I just shifted my perspective and the whole night, because it's hours of process for him. And so I just would come into the kitchen repeatedly, and I would just wash a few dishes here, wash a few there. Can I help you? Can I help? And it was so sweet because last night he was like, thank you so much for helping to clean up and this and that. And I thought, you know, all the angst that I used to have over him cooking, it was about me. It was about focus on myself and what I had to do. And I was just so grateful to see that there really is shift happening here. So anyway, grateful to be getting out of my resentment toward others today and on what I can do to make changes today. So love you all. Hope you have a great day. Take care. My best.
Thank you very much, Kathy G. Sherry KB, you're up next.
Good morning, Elaine. Good morning, everybody. It's Sherry KB in Northern California. Very grateful, recovered compulsive overeater, and thank you so much for your service, Elaine, and everybody on the line, and welcome, newcomers. These paragraphs are like the key to freedom for me and for all of us. This is the key that's going to turn and change my life from here on out, is what it's telling me. And I loved what was said earlier, that there's not a word written in here that says turn around, but that's what happens. Our life turns around when we do this work. It changes us forever in such a better way for me. So where I begin here is it says we avoid retaliation or argument. Because what I think is, you know, I don't like arguing, but like if you hurt me, I'm going to retaliate in some way, whether it's through my people pleasing to get you to do what I want, or it's in silence, or it's in so many different ways that I've seen by doing this work how I've manipulated people through my people pleasing. And it tells me that I have to take a kindly and tolerant view of each and every one. And then it says referring to our list again. So we've done the three columns, and now we're looking at the fourth column, which is the invisible column. That's what I call it, the invisible column, because that column is what's my part. And then it says I resolutely look at my own mistake. And so where was I selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened? Even though part of the situation might not be my fault, I still disregard what the other person did, and I look at where was I to blame, because the inventory is mine and not the other person's. In all those years that I did all those four steps, I wrote a novel and a story about what was wrong in my life and what everybody did to me, but I never really look at my part and to ask me where am I selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened. And for me, selfishness means that people aren't following my script. They're not doing what I want. The dishonesty is the lies I tell myself about people, and I have to ask myself, Sherry, are they true? And dishonesty is also not trusting God. And then self-seeking is wanting what I want when I want when I want it, and frightening is you're not going to do what I want, or I'm not going to get what I want, or I'm not relying on God. And so even though somebody was partly to blame, I still had to look at my part and clean up my side of the street. And for those who people who say they hold on to hurts, that things have happened to them, that people really hurt them when they were a kid, what I learned is that my part in it was that I was still holding on to it, and that I was re-injuring myself every time I told myself the story, and I was re-injuring you every time I told you the story, and my part was to let it go. And with that, I pass. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Sherry KB. So, again, we're on page 67 in the big book on the chapter How It Works. We're commenting on the first and second paragraph. Who would like to comment on these two paragraphs?
Greg B.
Greg B. Anyone else?
Marina K.
Marina K, is it?
Lisa Marina. S.P. from Colorado.
Lisa S.T.
S.P. is in Paul.
Rachel N.
And Rachel N. I think we'll have time for all of you. Let's go ahead and give it a shot. Greg B., followed by, I believe it's Marina N., and then we'll have Lisa S.P. and Rachel N. So, Greg, please go ahead, and Marina, you'll be up next.
Good morning. Thank you, moderator. Thank you, everybody. Happy Monday, at least in the U.S. right now. Hey, Greg B., recovered compulsive overeater, alcoholic, et cetera. Hey, so glad to be here, and I love this part of the book because it's really, I've been in the program a long time, decades and decades, worked the fourth step with good big book sponsors, but this fear ought to be classified with stealing. What are we stealing from? We're stealing from ourselves. The fourth step is about us. It's about our work. No one's going to say, good four step, good boy, you know, that's what I want, you know. I want acceptance and people pleasing and all that stuff, but it's about internal work, changing from the inside out. What kind of person am I going to become? Because I want to become a person who's whole, who's healthy, physically, mentally, especially spiritually, you know, to be a grown-up. You know, I got things going on in my life. I don't need to belabor those points, and they're significant things. They're not like somebody cut me off in traffic. That kind of stuff, it doesn't bother me these days, thanks to the program. It's, you know, significant things. I don't need to go into it. But the bottom line is this. Fear is stealing from me. We're stealing from ourselves, number one. We're using all this thought. We're using all this mind trip stuff to not take the action that we need to. You know, there's a problem at school with my kid, and I need to go deal with the kid. What? How much work is going to get done on this problem if I'm just sitting there worrying about it or you know, being afraid or pondering it? Nothing. Nothing. Action. Action, action. That's what the fifth step is and the fourth step. It's action steps. Do something. Do something. Do it wrong. That's okay. You know, there's no perfect right way to work the steps. I'm sorry. A lot of people think there are. I'm a controversial guy. Take the action. The biggest problem is not doing stuff. It's not doing stuff wrong. So that's my opinion. I'm afraid of some things today. I'm going to take some action, not just talk about it. So, Greg B. in California, thank you.
Thank you, Greg B. Court, let's see, Rowena K., you're up next, followed by Lisa S.P.
Hello, this is Rowena K., compulsive overeater. And I just love this paragraph, these paragraphs, which I've never understood until I started listening to A Vision for You. And first of all, it tells me I stop arguing with people and I start being nice to people. I mean, it's giving me really clear instructions on what to do, because I know how to people please, but I'm just angry with people all the time, you know, angry thoughts in my head. And, you know, it means I just spend a lot of time people-pleasing. And these paragraphs are just completely, like, bulletproof, because it says, then it tells me to stop thinking about the wrongs of other people. And I was never able to actually look at my own part until I stopped putting the wrongs of other people out of my mind, you know, until I sort of completely swept that aside. Then I could actually start seeing my part in things. Because up to that point, I was just so angry and so busy, you know, looking at what other people had done to me. And I think the codependence comes in here, because I'm so concerned, I'm obsessed with what everybody else is doing, and I'm so dependent on, you know, other people's responses to me for my sense of, you know, well-being. And it's really, really codependent. And I guess recently I've started to understand what the selfishness is, what the dishonesty is, because I never really thought that I was somebody who wanted to be in control and wanted to play God, because that is actually one of my, you know, one of the things I really need to do. And it's playing out at work at the moment, because I hate being told what to do. And, you know, I've left jobs because, you know, or my day is spoiled just because somebody tells me what to do. The other day, somebody was at work that I worked with who wasn't actually pulling their weight. They weren't doing what they were meant to be doing. And I'm not the boss, but I really wanted to tell this woman to start, you know, to get off a chair and go and do some work. And it was just so painful. And I prayed at that point, you know, just to be told what to do by my higher power. And I kept quiet. And it was really, really hard. You know, so we avoid retaliation or argument because I wanted to argue with her. And I actually had a calm day. It felt uncomfortable to do that, but, you know, I realized that I'm going to start doing more of that kind of thing. And for the first time, I feel as if I've got a clue, I've got the key. And I know now that that's, you know, what I need to do to actually to feel okay. And also the other thing is, if only people would do what I wanted them to do, then I would feel okay. And that just never happens. You know, there's been situations where I've got what I wanted and it didn't make any difference. So again, it's the relying on other people for my sense of well-being. And I just wanted to say thank you for letting me share and for this meeting. And I'll pause.
Thank you very much, Rowena K. Lisa S.P., you're up next, followed by Rachel N.
Thank you for your service. Yeah, I really like where it says here, the inventory was ours, not the other man's. When we saw our faults, we listed them. We placed them before us in black and white. So I've got to, you know, spend some time in prayer and meditation and really seek my, excuse me, my higher power's will, who I choose God, which I call God, and seeing my part. And sometimes at the beginning of the situation, it looks different than it does at the end. It's like the scales have to fall off my eyes. I'm kind of jaded at the beginning of doing these four steps or the 10th step. And then when I see my part, my life, there's so much darkness that's lifted off my shoulders. I'm carrying the weight of the world on my shoulders before I do the fourth or the 10th step. And when I place them before me in black and white, that's pretty definitive. There's no gray there. Okay, so like if I see a situation and then, you know, that whole thing where they say if it's hysterical, it's historical. If I'm pretty hysterical about a situation, I definitely need to do what I call a turnaround, because if I don't, do the schoolwork. It's the schoolwork. It's the notepad work. It's putting the pen and the paper and having God show up in that quarter inch between the pen and the paper. Then my situation, nothing shifted inside. Nothing has changed. I haven't opened up to God's will because God will show up in the writing. And if I write, and sometimes it takes a little bit longer than others, or if I say it to somebody else, or if I get transparent with God, and then what I love is that moment where the truth, where the sun comes out and all the birds start singing and say, and when I can really see my part, that's when all of that, the promises of the program can come true, and then I can see where my amends are, because the pain is in the blaming. If you change, I'll be happy, and I've got all those four fingers pointing back at me. That's suffering for me. I don't want to live in that place anymore. So I'm just going to keep coming back, really grateful to be here. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Lisa S.P. Rachel N., you're up next.
Yeah, thank you for all your service. I just wanted to share how just thinking about step four and our inventory and character defects, just fear and dishonesty and all of those main ones, just how interesting it is that we lump all of these crazy thoughts and feelings we have that drive us to food and other addictions into these, you know, simple or seemingly simple categories, but just how toxic they truly can be and how if we don't, you know, keep our inventories going and keeping check on the way we blame others for our own feelings and emotions and the way we allow life's difficulty, which is, again, life is difficult. It's not guaranteed to be smooth and easy, yet for some reason we think it should be, which typically puts us into, you know, the issues that we have. So just I've noticed in my life how easily things snowpile on top of one another, and if I don't keep up with my inventory, and if I don't keep up with, you know, turning that over to God and focusing on service, that my life starts to, again, feel out of control in an insane way, instead of when I choose to focus on my higher power's will for me instead of my own and trying to grasp tightly to that control, my days seem to go a little bit better, and I feel lighter and freer. And with that, I'll pass. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Rachel N. We have about 2 minutes if somebody would like to take that. And
Kelly B.
Who is that?
Kelly B.
Kelly B., we can just barely hear you. Is there a way you can speak a little more clearly?
It's Perry, P-E-R-R-I, Perry B.
Very good. So we have just about 2 minutes. Please go ahead.
Okay. So Perry B., compulsive overeater in Coral Springs, Florida. Thank you, moderator, and everyone for sharing today. I got a lot of value from this 10 o'clock meeting. I'm normally on the either 7 or definitely normally the 8 o'clock meeting. Anyway, what brought me to realize that the inventory that I do is very much like just writing a journal of my feelings about myself and about, you know, how I have either injured others or injured myself, more so injuring myself than others, because the others have all accepted my apologies. It's myself that I keep having to apologize to for things that I've done to harm my physical body or things that I can't forgive myself that I've done to others that they have forgiven me for, especially in the realm of incest and things of that nature. And these for me are really hard because it's hard to talk about these type of issues. And I find that working with a psychologist helps, but a lot of times I'm still discussing it with people that I don't even know, people that have never even met me just for the very first time, which shows me that I'm not doing my work that I need to be doing with a big book sponsor. And I have somebody that's been trying to get together with me to do the doctor's opinion. And I've basically been avoiding it, and I've been back into the sugar and flour, and I'm back at step one today, starting over again. And I've been in and out of the rooms for 35 years. So going to a reunion for an eating disorder center over the weekend really brought up so much for me that I'm willing now to get back to day one. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you very much. And thank you to everybody that has shared. We'll now transition the meeting by reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. Will Marie J. please read A Vision for You?
Yes, thank you. This is Marie J. recording
from Colorado. Marie, we're having a little trouble hearing you. Is there an adjustment that you might
Sorry, is that better? Is that better?
Much better. Thank you so much.
Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him was right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.